The Board of Trustees of Holden Village moved that we would have a scientific advisory committee for Holden at their meeting on July the 1st or 2nd of this year. They suggested the members of this committee from the board would be Dr. Larry Collins, a geologist from San Fernando,
Cal State
Northridge now. Dr. Rudy Edmonds, a geologist at California Lutheran College, formerly from Augustana, and before that Vice President for Operations and Director of Research for Ohio Oil Company, and a long-term research man in the area of petroleum engineering and other things. Reverend Earl Anderson, who is pastor at Magnolia in Seattle. Dr. Laverne Rieke, who is chairman of the board, professor of law at the University of Washington, ex officio. Werner Jansen, who is business manager of Holden Village, who is at my right here. This is Rudy Edmonds on my left. And then gave us, they appointed me as convener. And my name is Leo Busted from Washington State University. And said that you can appoint others as you wish. We discussed this and suggested that since there was going to be quite a group here this week, that we have an initial organizational meeting, since Rudy Edmonds would be here, Werner, of course, would be here, and two, what we thought would be excellent candidates for our advisory committee would be here in the form of Marianne Jacobson, who is professor of food and nutrition and spent her life in this area. She just retired at Washington State University. And Al Halverson, and Marion is right here. And Al Halverson, who is a longtime faculty member at Washington State University and a soil chemist. And since these are areas that we needed covered, we thought this was most appropriate. I discussed a couple of other people for this. One person who wishes to be very much to become involved and would have been here had we been able to give more notice is Roger McClellan, Vice President for Research and Director of the Inhalation Laboratory at Albuquerque, New Mexico at Loveless Foundation. He directs the largest and probably, I think, also the finest inhalation laboratory in the world, and is also an authority on inhaled radioactive particles, and we have quite a few of them around here. And is looking forward to joining us next year. The other person that we're considering is Ray Scrindy, who is a hydraulic engineer, trained initially at Washington State University, graduate work at State University of Iowa, and is a long-term Corps of Engineers employee and has been responsible for much of the hydraulic engineering, work in the Northwest for since the war, at least has a position of responsibility in this regard. And we'll add others, and we're open to suggestions regarding this. We have been in a meeting off and on since Sunday evening. However, we had a preliminary meeting. I guess the three who have thought about this the longest had our advanced meeting. In our college, a lot of my faculty like to talk about retreats. And I told them, we will have no retreats during my regime, only advances. And so we had an advance at Domke Lake last Thursday night and Friday morning, Rudy and Werner and myself. And then we were joined by Al and Marion on Sunday. We had established an agenda before this, Rudy and I and Werner, and we circulated this to the committee. And those of you who have looked at the bulletin board have been praised then of our agenda. And I should say that the person that has thought the most of this, probably most concentrated, is Werner, and has, of course, had the greatest input, I believe, into this. But I'm grateful to all of the members who have given us many ideas regarding this. And it is my purpose now to go through the agenda. And then we'll take each point, and I will try to summarize where we are on each point, and then we'll open it up for any suggestions, or if you feel an urge, you, before I even finish each point, you can inject something. So with that, we'll begin. And some of it, and the committee, of course, will correct me in my misinterpretations, and make additions and corrections as we proceed. And I should point out too that Marlene Johnson, where are you, Marlene? Oh yes, she is the secretary and gives us typed notes and brings coffee and tea and things like that and cookies. So item one. Item one is energy generation, which is of great concern, of course, to the village because of our remote situation. And because of the increasing cost of hydrocarbon fuels, on which we have to rely a good deal, we felt this was a very high priority item. And the point under this stated in the agenda was that we would look for a better utilization of electricity for light, heat, vehicle, and other utilization. The use of water, wind, solar, and wood for sources of energy to replace hydrocarbon fuel. And in the first instance, we looked at water power. As some of you know, we do run the village on substantially on water power about 7 or 8 months out of the year quite effectively. Pretty close to it. But we are in a serious situation during the other months. There has been a study performed on 10 Mile Creek, which is down the road here ways, and you cross it on the way up. And a rather a good proposal was made to the Forest Service regarding this. They felt that there were some issues that they might raise in it at this stage, and suggested an alternative, that of looking at damming Railroad Creek, since it is already disturbed. This, of course, presents some problems, since this Railroad Creek is regarded as a major waterway in the state. And another possibility would be to dam Copper Basin, from which we now draw our water and have our diversion dam. I think that's probably the alternatives in that case. Now, another possibility, of course, other than water, is wind. And we do not have a sufficient database in this and other areas, and that is one of the concerns, and one of the proposals of the committee is that we establish and develop a database in many areas, and that includes the wind. We are going to attempt to get further instrumentation, to get further wind data, especially in the months in which we are low on water power. And observations have been made casually that up on the peaks, such as Martin Range, there may be rather high gusts of wind during the winter. There is not very much wind down here in the winter, but we're going to try to obtain wind data here, and also perhaps down at Lucerne as possibilities to establish a database in this regard.
That's a movie wildfire.
To see whether there is possibilities. As one examines the wind data from the tailings, and we do have data there now, we realize that there isn't that much wind, although we often think there's probably more wind than there is. You really need a 10 mile an hour wind or more to utilize it effectively. And there isn't that much 10 mile an hour wind. As some of us suggested, and I guess it was unanimously agreed, there was probably more wind here in Koinonia during the summer. So that will be a data gathering enterprise. I failed to mention one thing underwater, which is an interesting one, and that also has to do with the database. It has been observed that there's a very substantial amount of water in the mine, and it's continually coming out. Mm-hmm. And the possibility then exists, if there's a very substantial quantity of water there, if one then siphons it out and could run it down during the winter months, you could then gain some power from this water. This has to be a feasibility study, and we are proposing such to put a weir in there to find out some flow data throughout the year, and especially now in the winter, and also determine quality of the water. Under solar, there are possibilities in solar, and we are going to attempt a very small pilot study, hopefully this year, to build a 4x8 panel and have a tank and obtain some measurements on just how much solar heat we can capture during this next winter, and running some temperature curves and this type of thing. And thus we'll have a handle on this, so that we can look at the possibility then of having solar collectors that might relieve us in two very critical areas. As I understand it, Lodge 2 and the
hotel,
mm-hmm. operate on hydrocarbon fuel throughout the year. And if we can capture a good deal of solar heat from this, and solar power, this will be of substantial saving. And so we're trying to capture John Rieke, and Werner is assigned to do this, and Al is going to get a bulletin. We have some data on that, and so that's what's going on there. Under wood, we have a good deal of wood around here, and something that is very exciting to us, and something that also, I guess, Congressman McCormick also discussed with us. I should divert here for a moment to say that that Mike McCormick, Congressman McCormick, who is one of two scientists in the House of Representatives, and who happens to be the congressman for this district of Washington, was here on Sunday night and Monday and met with the committee. He also presented a seminar to the people here. In fact, he had two of them. And he gave us, I think, a succinct summary of the energy situation in the United States, and he is appropriate one to do it, since he happens to be the chairman of the subcommittee on energy in Congress. And he had several suggestions, and some of our input here is a result of our conversations with him and his encouragement. As some of you know, he's also assisting us with trying to reclaim the tailings. So that was, I think, very salutary in relative to input. As to wood, we are excited about steam generation. And what we are thinking about in this regard is to make some kind of a covered area out where the mine is, where the mine was, the mill itself, as one possibility, and to collect up then during the year all kinds of burnables, whether it's from the kitchen, the sawdust from Ernie's mill, and all of this, and then also to clean up the forest. And we get down to this is another point on what we're doing with the forest, and to chip a lot of this material and save it up and thus possibly be able to run a steam generator for these months in which we are low on water. And also the possibility exists then to take some of the heat from that to possibly heat buildings near or something like that. So this we are quite excited about, and also the possibility exists that this might be made in the form of a project proposal, since this kind of a project might have application in many small communities. And also, is there something more we ought to say about the steam generator? Also, of course, we have to look into the involvement here, and we have to do studies on this relative to water power, because will the time come when we can't get enough wood for it, say? Although there exists, of course, in the valley here a tremendous amount of wood and downed wood, and the possibility exists in this regard, as Werner pointed out, that the Swiss miners who once mined here and who are great friends of the village, used a high lead kind of system. In other words, they stretch a big cable and then they use chokers and pull up the logs and then take them across so it doesn't bust up the whole forest. And they have a shorter line on this, which we may be able to borrow to haul in wood like this and maybe run a chipper.
I think the other thing on this is that Mike McCormick mentioned that money was available from ERDA, the Energy Research Development Agency, for some projects that might have application to other small communities. And this steam generation, where we'd utilize the forest products and waste products for the power source, could be one of these. Mm-hmm. We might be able to get a grant from ERDA to actually establish this. So he was very encouraging on getting money from ERDA. Apparently, right now, with the energy situation, there's a lot of money that is available to this agency for dissemination to people and places and organizations and cities that want to try things.
Thank you. All right, now on another aspect of this is the self-feeding stove that Al brought up, and Al is very, we're fortunate in having Al here, because Al has a lot of Mormon friends. And Mormons have been doing things like this for quite a while in the area of food and food storage, and also in one of his friends has a self-feeding stove. I think some of them are produced over in Everett, Washington, and it's kind of an interesting proposal for some of the other areas where we are now using hydrocarbon fuel. Also wood, we are considering running some vehicles from this, and we're also looking at the possibility of cellulose to methane conversion. We utilize some of the cellulose here to then manufacture methane. Another area in under energy is that of horsepower. It seems like everybody likes horses these days, and we wondered, instead of running vehicles for some of this and hauling the garbage and all, should we use horses, or a horse and wagon, or a couple of horses and wagon? We have that in temporary abeyance for several reasons. One of them is that it's mainly good only for the summer around here, and we do not have grazing rights. And until we'd have a base for obtaining forage, this would be a problem. And also, there may not be enough continual help, that no horses. At least this was a concern of some of the village. I operate in a different area where it seems like every girl I meet is a horse nut. most of them probably have never harnessed a horse. They usually put on a saddle. So, that's the summary of point number one, which is energy. Are there any questions, suggestions, deletions, or corrections? Yes, this is a very important point, and it's one that has to be considered. We'll have to write an environmental impact statement. We may have to put in precipitators, and this will be has to be factored in to the cost of the comparative cost of the various methods. It's a very important point, and it's one that you'll have to face. Another one that I failed to mention, Rudy usually corrects me on, is that we are also interested in this water coming out of the mine in the analysis, because there's quite a bit of copper in it, and we're going, a part of a feasibility study will include looking at means of removing the materials by precipitation process or other means to collect the material that comes out, and there might be sufficient copper that might be of a little value that might be collected over a period of time that is saleable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is the wood supply considered
to be exhausted? No. And that's a good point. And if I don't bring it up, you remind me when we get to point number nine. Because that's a very important issue, and it's one we have addressed.
Have you considered, is there enough trash or garbage, would you might say, in the summer months to get methane out of it here in the, as they do? They have a pilot program going in Los Angeles. Yeah. Down in the Torrance area. Is that feasible? Has that been considered?
Yeah, it's
one of the things we want to study.
Yeah, it's one of the things we have listed as something to study. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. We're not that big a city, of course. We're a city of, 5 months out of the year, average about 400 maybe.
Mm-hmm. Not average that much.
During 4 months, we don't average that much. So it's less than that. Good. Yes.
Well, some of these things sound like you're looking at the new state of the art in here. Aren't you pretty much limited to, you know, existing technology? Because, you know, you don't have the resources here to go on a program and have it fail. You know, many advanced programs have degrees of success and failure. Unless you get something, you know, like some funding from IRDA or something.
Yeah.
But aren't you pretty much going to be limited to existing technology?
Pretty much existing technology. And we'll develop that as we go through. What we've talked about now are water power, and that's pretty well developed. And we, of course, have two generators now. It'll be a low-head one, and that's pretty straightforward. On the steam plant, in fact, what we're looking at there is to get a surplus one somewhere that might work. And if it doesn't already have an oil jet in it to put one in it that will tide us over if something fails, if we rely on that during the winter. The stove that we mentioned that's self-feeding is already in place. The cellulose to methane conversion is a matter of seeing how much, of course, is available that we can do this with. The running the vehicles from wood type things, and this, of course, technology, as you say, it's been known a long time, very inefficient, of course, but when I was in Africa during the war, we ran a lot of them that way. Mm-hmm. So, we can't take too many failures, and this point is well taken, because that's why we have to have rather intensive study before we go to steam generator. See that there's no hookers in it, although we do have one advantage, is that we have a lot of manpower, and it's cheap. All we got to do is feed them. Bring them up the hill and back down. Bake bread and see that they're happy. They're all going to be happy. So, and also, the other thing is on the wood. I guess all, how many board feet you cut in the last 2 years, Ernie?
Well, exact right now?
Well, round numbers.
Oh, I got about 12,000, 15,000 right now.
15,000 board
last
feet?
Year, 10,000.
And so that's how much have we paid for, how much does that cost us for, from the Forest Service?
Where's the lady going?
About $277.
Yeah, so that's a lot of board feet, you see. So we have cheap lumber and cheap labor.
We got $8,000 worth of white pine that costs us about $65.
I should point out, this is all legal on the up and up.
Yeah, this is all... There's no night requisitions.
No.
Ernie, as you know, everyone knows, he's an honorable man.
Labor is no longer cheap because the crew got organized today.
Uh-oh.
And they're negotiating, Mr. Turner.
Yeah, and we're going to do the same thing as Mayor Alioto. Fire up.
Now, no, you're not next because Eleanor had her hand up, and then we're going to get to you.
You mentioned that as an alternative to the Ten Mile Creek Power Project, that Copper Basin was a possibility. What would that do to the present water supply in the power plant?
Well, this is sort of a far-fetched possibility, but if the basin was dammed up and was of sufficient size where we could store water during the especially like the fall, the late summer fall season, and then have a controlled release of the water during the fall and winter. You know, if we could maintain a flow so we could generate maybe 150 kW of power through the majority of the winter rather than, you know, a lot of power now and then 30 kW during March, April, or February, March, April, May. But the basin, you know, would sort of lend itself to this because it necks down and there's good rock structure right at the outlet, but whether we would ever get permission to do this and what the cost might be, that would be a determining factor. So. But it is a possibility. So.
I should point out to those of you who are not so familiar with the village, we do have a rather effective power plant now, which was built about 10 years ago.
64 and 67.
The contract cost on it now, I suppose, if you were to build it, would be in the neighborhood of a quarter to a third of $1 million. And we built it pretty much with volunteer labor. And we had, when it was completed at that time, we had $38,000 into it. So it's quite a bargain. I guess if we, and we, a decision was made at that time, you know, what should we do? Should we stay with our diesel generating plant? Should we go this route? And we were under a lot of pressure to rebuild the power lines or bring them up to par and get PUD power in here. And at the present rate, had we gone that route, I guess the bill would be...
Well, we're using about 1 million kilowatt hours of electricity a year now here. And at 2 cents a kilowatt, this would be $20,000 a year. Whether we could buy power here for 2 cents a kilowatt would be doubtful. I think Stehekin, the cheapest rate, is 3 cents. So we're talking, you know, our yearly power bill would be $20,000 to $30,000 a year. So we're very fortunate. The one advantage of doing something in Copper Basin, we could use the existing pipeline, the existing hydro equipment. We wouldn't have to reinvest in that. So, you know, there may be some possibility there if the basin is of sufficient size and the Forest Service would cooperate. So then we could canoe up there rather than fight mosquito.
All right, now it's your turn. How?
So.
Oh yes, Al will tell you.
Excuse me, I didn't.
The self-feeding stove. That.
Well, without having the diagram here, it's roughly this way. On the back side, there's a storage bin in a sense, where you put in logs. Maybe 2 feet, maybe 36 inches, and designed so that the combustion is on another side behind on the one side of the panel. Just gravity feeds it in, and there's a thermostat that regulates the draft, and this draft regulates the rate of burning. and a good Mormon friend of mine has one, and he says it's just absolutely amazing how good a control you can get of the temperature and how uniformly it'll feed in the wood. He has one and it's in use. I don't know. I don't know that he uses it that steadily so that he can get a pretty good picture of it, but certainly it'll go 24 hours without any question. So once a day would be the maximum it would have to be fed.
I have a friend up at Worley, Idaho that has one that he puts in used railroad ties from the outside. He puts in one railroad tie every 48 hours and makes an entire 7-room household.
They're extremely efficient.
Yeah. We just bought some for $2 we're going to use for fencing in our college. Adobe, and then Al.
If it proves feasible to siphon and water out of the mine, yeah. Would it also prove feasible once you got the mine empty to fill it back up again in the summertime?
Yes, that's what we would do. And that's a very good point. You see, we do have excess power in the summer. It's good to point that out to you because that can factor into your thinking on other things we might do. Because we pursued that. Is there some storage area we could pump into to utilize in the winter? This would be great, you see. Anything else on this? Well, Al, you had a point.
Yeah, just in partial answer to the question that was raised over here, some of these projects, are they economically feasible? Could we stand a loss and this sort of thing? On this methane generation, there the Monroe Honor Farm, which is the state honor farm here at Monroe, Washington, they have a dairy operation. They were carrying out a feasibility study here last winter on the production of methane from animal manure. Now, admittedly, that's different than probably generating it from wood, but the same principles apply, and I think with some minor adjustments, we could use their approach and probably adapt it here. There are a number of these studies underway. In fact, it's nothing really new. This has been done in some of the other countries, foreign countries, and been in operation as a steady part of their energy development, energy production.
Thanks, Al. All right, we'll then go to the next point, which is energy conservation. And here we state that the utilization of sources other than hydrocarbon fuels to include above sources and air from the interior of the mine, the movement of business activity and certain winter activities to the Lucerne area. All right, to introduce this, we hold in abeyance any concern here for Lucerne. So the part that we will address relates to the energy conservation on this location. And we have to cut down on the amount used. In this regard, that if it's a short run with a vehicle, we should, if possible, walk or have someone carry you or use an electric truck. And we propose that because we have a cheap power in the summer that we could probably benefit by obtaining a couple additional battery-operated vehicles, which have the one we have has proven so successful, and also quite maintenance-free, and to then look for perhaps some surplus or second-hand one that's still good from a lot of the companies who turn them in every 1 to 2 years, to add this to our fleet here. And to obtain the same type as we have now, and we feel that all of our workers should be alert to the fact that that every gallon of gasoline is exceedingly expensive and very dear, and furthermore that we should look at further insulation, to weather stripping the doors, and to consider plastic storm windows on all of the buildings that are utilized during the winter, that these may be made out of the wood we have, and to put plastic on them, and then we can store them from year to year, and this also might go to storm doors. As to heating the garage, this is a problem because the garage has to be used during the winter. It is up on the hill there, and one of our suggested feasibility studies is to obtain air temperature from the mine. There are some indications that the air temperature in the mine is around 70 degrees and that it's also quite warm in the winter. We're going to try to get some data on the temperatures coming from the exhaust of the mine, and then the possibility exists then to build a wooden pipe and to with a squirrel cage run into the garage and thus heat it. That's one possibility, and solely one of our consulting engineers will be asked about this in his planned trip up here very shortly. Is there any other suggestion in this regard? Or any questions? All right, then we go to point three, which is food production. And the statement we made here in agenda was the development of garden areas and utilization of animals to consume forage and garbage, goats, possibly pigs, hydroponics, and fish culture. All right, where we sit on that right now is that we are considering various garden areas. Three of them are under consideration, or should be investigated. An area up in the miners' village, an area that might be of more interest, is that very large field just below 10 Mile Creek on the Railroad Creek side. If some of you have been in there, there's quite a large open area there, and it might be possible potential, and of course you have water very handy there. And the other area is if we go to the reclaiming of the tailings. There's quite a few acres there that may be potential for some production. Initially it would be it might well be forage, it may well be fast growing trees if we got to that, or if we went to say a steam generating plant, or it might be a garden. The kind of materials we have considered for growth in such gardens, I hope the committee corrects me on this, is cabbage. We don't know about squash, whether the growing season is long enough for winter squash. Carrots, lettuce,
spinach.
Spinach, yeah, chard. And in this regard, I think it's appropriate that we go to hydroponics next. And we feel that we're looking at then transport of material up here that's very bulky. And if one could grow all the lettuce and chard and then in hydroponics, extending, for example, our present greenhouse into a plastic type thing for the summer and go into production of tomatoes and cucumbers, we may work towards satisfying our salad needs pretty much here, using hydroponics for the high cost type things.
You had to pay labor. This wouldn't be economic, but this is all assuming that their labor will be free.
They don't organize, yes.
Much out, Ernie.
So, in this regard, we are doing some investigation as to the best approach on the hydroponics. And then on animals, we considered cows, and they are temporarily in abeyance, although they can with some supplementation do quite well on wood chips, according to some studies at Washington State University right now. But to walk through 12 feet of snow to bag the buffalo isn't especially attractive. And goats, of course, are appealing to me. We haven't resolved anything on that. Rabbits seem to be of great interest, but part of that is consumer acceptance. And we'd probably, if we go this route, and this is a real possibility as far as some of us are concerned at least, that we would probably raise them during the summer and then kill them and use them for the winter community. They're the test case.
Yeah.
Well, I really like rabbit myself. And,
never let any of the children see the rabbit farm, so they yeah. never get to eat them.
I don't know. They'll be off limits to children. And we have resource people in this regard, Al Hoverson, of course, and then his friend Bob Thornton, and they're going to give us some help in these areas. And of course, Marion is also has good input into this too. Another exciting thing has to do with fish culture. And some of the things that are under consideration here is to either have pen rearing down at Lucerne area as one possibility, or another one that we'd like to try this next year is in the raceway from the from our power plant to build a small area there, a pond area, and to obtain some trout and try to see how it does there. But there's still a good deal of information that has to be obtained. I could not reach my friend who is one of the authorities on this from Idaho. As you know, Idaho probably produces, over 90% of the trout produced in America, yeah. United States, and Idaho. What?
Oh,
you're still on wood chips? Oh.
Well, I need the trout wood chips.
Yeah, I need the posse. But we'd have to cover it up so you folks won't be out there fishing them at night in the daytime.
Rudy isn't in charge of that project.
No, Rudy is not in charge. And so I'm going to see Bill Klontz on this. We have to get the best size of trout, and there's a lot of ifs in there, but we feel this has real possibilities. The temperature, of course, is very critical here, and we'll be investigating that also. Another area under food production utilization has to do with dehydration. Getting a dehydrator in here, or the means to dehydrate food, seems to be a very real possibility. We have to, of course, test this on acceptance, and again, the winter community may be an appropriate test case. That's a trouble you have with some of us who are basically experimentalists. And because we are becoming more energetic as far as getting donations of some of these things, or obtaining them for a very low price. This has to do with apples, apricots, prunes, and carrots, and sometimes we're given more than we can use at one time, so we go to dehydration. And we're quite excited about this, really. Another thing is that we are getting donations of cereal crops, and of course the greatest interest is that of wheat. And we'd like to pursue then getting a mill. In fact, there's two people coming up shortly with a mill.
There's two mills coming with a lot of people.
Oh, two mills coming. And something that produces, 50 pounds an hour or something. It'll grind it. And utilize that then for our bread, and also develop this for cereals in the morning. We are quite keen about moving away from the box cereals and moving towards oatmeal, cracked wheat, and granola kind of things, because these are very expensive, these box cereals, and I know Al has had a lot of experience with the cracked wheat thing, and I eat oatmeal every day. He eats cracked wheat every day. And as long as you grind it quite often, you have a very delicious tasting thing. And so we're going to move towards that kind of a thing, and look at other utilizations of these kinds of cereals that we can develop here. And another thing that Werner has been very active on is, and he has in essentially all these areas, is that he's befriended someone in Fisher Flouring Mills, who's a vice president. And they have a pilot of flour mills, experimental mills that they use on certain projects. And they're still using this one, but it may not be too long before they get rid of it. And it has the cleaner in the whole works, and we may end up with that. So that's rather an exciting possibility. And we have resource people here who we can call on that that Marion and Al know, eager people who would be very happy to make recommendations, for example, on how long you have to store the flour, what moisture content of the wheat should be, and these types of things that that one who is informed on this can certainly help us with, so that we give you the best product possible. Another important area that we feel rather strongly about is to develop very substantial storage capability. And I think we think this is very important. And Marion, in her first day here, found a cement garage in the miners' village. And with very little input, we could have a very good storage area there. And Rudy has suggested, and I think Werner too, up at the old change room up there, it's solid cement. All you got to do is close the windows in. And the other one is that thing near the sawmill, that building near the sawmill. And then to build maybe a root cellar that is available to us, maybe from the kitchen or something, to store many things in for the winter. And we feel this is very important, that we ought to move towards building up, storing some things maybe more than a year in advance. Some things we'll keep for longer than that, as long as it's properly prepared. In this regard, we considered various storage methods, sealed plastic garbage cans, for example, and other things like this. And we made a whole list of things that could be stored for extended periods of time. And we also suggest in this regard that we now buy, for example, a very large amount of coffee. Well, before we had suggested it, Werner announced that he'd already ordered essentially a year's supply. And then your Stan has, so he took care of this. So this is Stan. If you folks don't know him, he's been the head cook this last year, and will be married here in a few weeks. So his wife is getting a good cook and baker, and also a great guy. He's great also on Krispies. The kitchen baked me the biggest crispy ever made in the world. And as the world's authority on crispies, I can say it was the best one ever made. Now, and also in this storage thing, we are looking at using our, as some of you may not know, we now own some property near where the boat comes in at 25 Mile Creek, where some of you boarded the boat. If you look right up above from the dock there, you'll see a kind of a reddish house, which is a 4 or 5 bedroom house with a large basement. No, I don't think it has a basement.
A space.
It's a space. It's a space under it, which we could maybe utilize. And to build some other storage facilities there, and then have, we already have two trucks down there, don't we? That can,
a two-ton and a smaller.
Yeah. We can go out and get and obtain food. In this regard, and before the night is out, if you know some people who we should contact for donations of food or sources of food, we'd like their name, rank, and serial number, as well as their address. And then to utilize these storage facilities. So that's all we're going to say at this point in our summary of food production. Are there any other suggestions, additions, or corrections? Yes, John.
Have you given any thought to bee culture?
No, we have not.
We
did not give it a thought, and I, who love honey so much, I don't know why I didn't do that.
Well,
we couldn't keep them here in the winter.
You know, I looked into it once before, and it. I think it becomes a problem of the number of months we would have to feed them in comparison with they feed us.
Well, what about 25 miles?
Well, that would be a different situation. Then it would, anything we do down there is a problem right now because of the logistics and transportation of either having to have somebody down there full time or making regular trips down there to, you know, to service the bees. But
That's certainly, I think that's a good suggestion. I think we're going to put this down here. Mm-hmm. And another thing I'd like to see done, and I have written for the plans, it's really a neat thing for training, for here and for training children in how bees operate. A friend of mine in Davis, California, made a plastic beehive in his living room out of clear plastic. And with a pipe down, and then he feeds, drops sugar in there and all, and then you can watch the bees come in and go down and make the honey. And it's really fun to sit there and watch it. And I've written for the plans because a friend of mine in Alaska wants it, and I wanted it too, because I thought maybe we could build it here and at least have it for the summer in Holden, just as an educational enterprise.
Do it in a remote area.
Pardon?
Do it in a remote area of Holden.
Oh, right here, I think. Come in down there.
There are some kids who are allergic to those.
Yes.
Now, but this is all self-contained.
Pardon?
This is all self-contained.
Yeah, but the bees will be coming in.
Yeah.
Leon, what kind of climatological data do you have for the village here?
Werner will answer that.
Most of it that's compiled in a readily available form is what was taken by the mine during the 20 years of their history. And this was actually taken on the upper mine level where they had their recording station. But it would be within probably a degree or so of down here. And we do have maximum mean temperatures through that whole 20-year period. And that's one of the problems in crop production, that we're talking about some pretty low mean temperatures. The actual frost-free period of the summer would be probably at a maximum 85 days and could be as short as 60 days. So.
And it frost here in June the 20th or 18th?
It was after the middle of June.
Of course, with the greenhouse, you could really get them
going.
A good jump.
Yeah. We're growing zucchini outside this year that we started in the greenhouse, and they're doing very well. We've gotten big zucchini off of it. Even a couple of weeks ago, we had some. That does help to start them in there and put them out. And one of the problems is the nighttime temperatures get so low that growth would really slow down. It takes about till 11 o'clock in the morning before they wake up again and start growing.
You're like some of the people here.
Leo?
Yes.
On food production, have you considered sprouting?
Yes, we discussed that briefly, and I didn't mention it. I should have put that down because we did discuss this as to the possibility of using lentils and bean sprouts and
alfalfa.
I don't know if we
didn't mention alfalfa.
We didn't mention alfalfa. That's an alfalfa possibility. Mm-hmm. And whether you use dark or light, and so that was discussed tonight.
You can even conceivably a profile project this winter. You can put small sprouted kits in the dormitory. In place where people are living, and the temperatures will stay up high enough in there. Sitting around by the bed.
So be sure, say Marlene, you'll be taking this off of the tape, will you? Or in the long winter nights here. And be sure then to note in here the possibility of sprouting under this point to include these remarks made relative to both lentils, peas, beans, and alfalfa, and the possibility of having them in the dorms. We'll have to investigate those relative to the best means as the percentage of light and this type of thing. The other thing we haven't looked into, do you use very many mushrooms here? Maybe some mushroom culture.
A lot of mushrooms.
Yeah.
Well,
I didn't mention chicken because And maybe we should have. It's of course a high intake of cereal, and we really didn't get much on that. We had discussed it earlier, and you proposed this as one possibility to get in fryers, and then to have some of those for, if not during the summer, for the winter, and store them for the winter.
Yes. Pretty hard to come out on that, Leo, because you'd have to haul in all your feed.
Yeah.
You'd have to buy the feed in relatively small quantities, and you'd end up really, you could buy the fryers and ship them in cheaper than you could haul the feed in and grow them and take care of them yourself.
Yes, Bob.
I know there was some conversation and checking out the feeding of swine with garbage preventing the food beyond the initial level.
The problem there is the health regulations that really are very stringent, and whether again it would be, we don't have really enough garbage to feed very many, so it would be sort of a low production.
We'd have to boil the garbage.
Yeah.
I think we'd have real problems getting permission from the health department to do that. It still could be pursued, but it would be nothing very major in terms of food production.
And I, of course, love pigs, and I'd like to see them around, but...
well,
I was surprised it hadn't been mentioned.
Yes. All right. Any other? Yes. Dobie, and then...
Has any thought been given that food production had a place other than Golden Village?
We did not discuss that at this time. We have discussed it in our board meetings quite extensively. In fact, we're even considering a farm not too far from here that would be accessible, readily accessible to do truck farming and utilize some of our labor for that type of thing. But we did not address that here. Do you want to say anything about this one?
Yeah, I think at least the conclusion that I'm aware of was that our you know, consumption of especially the truck gardening type items is very minimum from a dollar standpoint. You know, it's maybe $2,500 a year, I think I figured out, for less than that. So that certainly that in itself wouldn't justify, you know, a truck gardening, buying property and operating it. But it might come someday where, especially if somebody would donate a farm to the village, and that farm then could sort of operate independently as far as, you know, its own identity, but tie into the village in terms of providing some food items. But that's the problem, that we don't really use that much to justify a farm operation. So.
Yes, Hal.
Just another comment on that. If we get into this farming operation, keep in mind that's a tremendously big capital investment. For instance, right now in the Columbia Basin, it costs about $1,000 an acre to grow potatoes. So your capital investment is just, I think, beyond what we want to get into. That'd be my thought on it.
We are presently buying a percentage. I don't know how big a percentage. Is it all of it right now from...
He doesn't have to handle it.
Oh, is that right?
He doesn't have a problem.
Oh, yeah.
It started off big time, but it dwindled very quickly. Right.
One of our former staff that lives in Chelan got into truck farming on a small basis, and we've been purchasing some items from him, but probably some of his experience would be good to learn for us, too, and I think there's maybe limited possibilities here for the near future.
Now, Stan, I'm going to call on you for a comment in just a few minutes if you have something to say in addressing this after I finish my next point, which is the final point relative to this food problem. And one of the things that we discussed in committee was the consideration given to saying one meal a week that would be, say, meatless and would consist perhaps, and this is up, of course, to the cooks to bring to the attention of the people that one can have a interesting diet that might be meatless and also very healthy, and also bring to mind the condition of the scarcity of food in the world today, and however, realizing that we have a clientele who comes in here that expects to and pays for a good diet, that we'd probably have it sometime during the week, and that the people that we could have on, that would be an alternate diet that day, but that this particular diet, that might be a cracked wheat cereal in the morning with appropriate things associated with it, for noon maybe lentil soup, and for evening something else, and Marion and Stan can cook up something, and Will.
The Atmall Planet, I'm sure most of you have read it, haven't you? And I think, at least among the young people, there's a great deal of enthusiasm for at least one meal a week, which would be protein sources other than meat sources.
And that is one day, the meals are one day a week. And they could be planned rather simply, but utilizing vegetable sources of protein. There's a great deal of enthusiasm in this area, and it is possible, and we might call it, instead of diet for a small planet, you might call it 20th century diet, or something of this sort, which we may
21st.
21st century.
Or centennial year.
Yeah.
Bicentennial.
And it might teach a little nutrition along with it.
Yeah, that's another focus of ours that Marion certainly emphasized.
We could even show the film of diet for a small planet. And there also are films which are extend somewhat more scientifically the problem of nutrition from alternate sources. We could have a considerable amount of educative activity along with perhaps saving a little bit of money, though I think we ought to watch the cost along with any of these substitute kinds of food and keep a very careful record as to whether really we're saving money. If we're going to start using sesame seeds, for instance, the cost will skyrocket, you know, so you have to be carefully chosen.
All right, Stan, you want, and then we'll get to you, Dave. Do you want to react to any of this?
It's a very feasible idea. We got a lot of bulgur last year from the government. We didn't get any this year. And Will developed a hot dish made from bulgur that a lot of people didn't realize there was bulgur in it. It was a kind of tricky thing to get rid of because bulgur didn't have a real good PR around the village. And people didn't particularly like eating bulgur. But we did this past one, we had one meal where we had just a cereal item, rice, potatoes, or bulgur, and that was for the world hunger.
Yeah.
But it was our big meal, sacrifice one big meal a week. But particularly if you have people sign up,
yeah.
That way it's completely voluntary.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have two settings anyway.
Yeah.
So it worked out quite conveniently.
Yeah.
I think you'd be on better nutritional base if you had a combination of various sources. And that's probably what you'd want to do. There are some good recipe books.
Oh, yeah, I've got recipe books for just meatless recipe books.
Yeah, and the Seventh-day Adventists here can help us because they've got this down pat.
Yep.
And I have a whole file of Seventh-day Adventist recipe.
French fried peanut butter. French fried peanut butter. Seventh Day Adventist. No. I'm just getting the Seventh Day Adventist some suggestions. All right, anything else? That's very good, Marion. Anything you, Stan or Marion, wants to say more about this because you've had the most experience. Okay, Dave.
I was going to comment on
storage.
Yeah. I was going to go to look at the family cell through to Washington. And we have the same problem with these contributions to large quantities of things that we took classes a year. And we became very adept at swapping it with other industries. I was going to suggest that you develop a storage facility on the outside of the village, so there'd be at some point where you could maybe completely do that, even perhaps with answers and answers.
Yes. So be sure we get this in the notes. This on the matter of storage, to have a barter system. And in this regard, too, Al again, with his friends who are Mormons, they have developed this storage thing to fairly well, you know, and he is going to contact some of those relative to their experiences in this, the best storage methods, the temperatures, and moisture, and this type of thing.
I think, Julio, if you ever got storage plates that, when you're talking about wheat and lentils and things like these are things that we have friends that raise these things.
Yes.
And to go to some of our farmers' friends and say, hey, 500 pounds of lentils, we have a very good chance of getting the guy later for a complete summer. And I do a lot of this, but it involves storage.
And you see, and we have access to some pretty cheap storage here. Yes, Dave, that's a good point.
Yeah, it turned out it's super exciting. I've always gotten a bit of the road. It's the first time we really talked about what use you might have for this. But one of the things, again, we found out in this group call was that we had access to a great deal of coders because we were providing kids to go out and do in the field. And that's another thing that I think we can develop here is with the orchardists and potato growers and so on. Because you can send a couple, well, a van load of kids to go get the stuff and start to haul it. But you have a lot of stuff available to you. But if you can't, as the gentleman just said, the work's got to get out.
You're going to send out to get any assistance, right? If they were paying you money, you'd be glad to get their food. We have 11 signed up for picking a food car in order to get on only about 2 days. That's the top two questions. We're going to have to draw a lot.
Oh, that's biblical.
There's another thing that we might do, and that is recycle containers that we get the food that's in. Werner says that they buy the coffee in a 3-pound can, which is the most economical as far as the price it is getting now. And those 3-pound cans make very good reusable, say for the dried foods that could be restored in the 3-pound can, whereas some of them now have to be discarded just in terms of space. So there may be containers in which food is bought, which can be recycled and reused.
Well, I just noticed, Will, did you have anything you wanted to say on this, or did you just come in?
I think a lot of my just hope is that next year, the Gary Baines on the staff,
Good. Will will be in charge of the kitchen now and stand leading for this next year.
And what's the lady's name who's coming?
Her name is Mary Bates.
Oh, so tell her to be sure to talk to Marion. Yes. Yes, this was discussed. And I'm no authority on coffee, since I drank enough the first 30 years of my life to last me forever, and that's quite a few years ago. But the addicted ones tell me that the coffee they buy is a blend, and we're afraid that we'll end up with the beans that Hills Brothers sends to other companies. some problem grinding. I kind of liked it. I remember when I used to go to stores as a kid, I always used to like to buy the beans. You'd grind them right there and you'd get that aroma and it'd last you for a few days.
You'd we get always your, do that, but it costs so much more.
Yeah.
We always grind our own at home. Holes and lungs if you're going to be at home.
So, but they could be investigated. All right. Now, that takes care of point number 3. We then go to transportation. We've already discussed transportation because there is some overlap here, and we mentioned the electric carts. We wondered it would be nice to have a garbage truck running on garbage converted to methane, but that's kind of, at least that's dreaming a bit, or maybe it's possible. And we again emphasize conservation. We considered, of course, standardization of equipment. But when you're getting the kind of donations we have, we don't go out and say we don't want that, and because that isn't you know, such and such a kind. We take almost anything they give us, and our givers have not standardized. In China and Russia, they have. Well, the water wheel is the fifth point. A few of us have hang-ups on water wheels. We just love to see a water wheel. And now I think Chuck Anderson is here. Is Chuck Anderson here? He's kind of a, I think we could probably interest him in the water wheel. And some of you remember Herman. Yeah, and you know he built some water wheels out in New Guinea. What we're thinking of here is to build a water wheel, again in the raceway, down in the Peace Park area, and probably have enough generation of power to make light down in that area, including the sauna, and also to have some lights along the ground in that whole Peace Park area, which we hope to develop into a very attractive area. And even if we could get enough power, and we'd have to run the feasibility study, to have a little water heater for showers in that area. So that's what we're looking at there. Any more on the water wheel? All right. Now we go to, that was point number five. Point number, we're going to leave science education program until the last. The seventh point is the reclaiming of the tailings. And point number eight is improved sewage disposal. And what I'd like to do is just call on Werner now to summarize just where this is. Could you do that?
Yeah, we can do it very briefly so we can get on to the rest of it. But the tailings, the Forest Service feels that it's possible to reclaim them, to get them eventually, so that the pollution is cut down to almost zero or minimized, and also to plant the surface so that eventually there will be grass, trees, and so forth up on the tailings. It becomes a matter of economics. It looks now as if the minimum amount that would have to be spent to do this adequately over a long period of time, to rehabilitate them so that it would last over a long period of time, would be at least about $1.9 million. And the sort of the ultimate program that they proposed last week was, about a $2.5 million program. And this may be out of the ballpark of what the government is willing to, you know, to put into the tailings in this particular location at this particular time. That we don't know yet. The Forest Service has to make the choice of what they want to do, and then it will have to be submitted to their superiors in Portland and Washington, and then decided. But basically what they want to do, one part would be to stabilize the creek, put new riprap in to prevent any flooding of the creek into the tailings and erosion there. They would regrade the tailings to a certain extent. And they would cut down the steep slopes out here to about a 2-to-1 slope so that something could be planted on it. They would put some drain areas in the tailings themselves to catch drain water from the snowmelt in the spring months and catch it before it gets on the tailings so it can be drained off into the creek before it gets polluted. Maybe establish some drains and small lakes on the tailings so that the polluted water can evaporate and be dealt with there without getting into the creek. And then, of course, what it'll take to get plant growth started is to lime it heavily, because the acid is very high, the acid content. The pH is down as low as 2.9 in some areas of the tailings. And so this will take a lot of lime. And just that one problem of getting lime up here, they, of course, contacted the boat company, and they figured it would take just 2 months of hauling to get enough lime up here in order to do the tailings some good. And then, of course, it would have to be fertilized and then planted. You can take a look up on the number one tailings, and there's excellent plant growth started up there in small plots that the Bureau of Mines has done. So that aspect of it is more or less a foregone conclusion. It can be done. It could get started as early as next year if the government does support the project with the money that's needed. The sewage thing from the village, we have a proposal into the Forest Service, and again, I don't think we'll get any definite word back from them until they decide what they're going to do with the tailings, because our sewage system would be tied into the tailings piles themselves. A series of lagoons, evaporation ponds, polishing ponds, and irrigating a small part of the tailings. So those two projects are just sort of a matter of time and money.
Is this the tailings the problem of the government or the problem of Holden? I mean, who is responsible?
It's the government. They fortunately own the tailings right now. Oh. Although there are going to be a couple of surveyors in here to make sure that where the line is, to see if in fact any of the tailings are on our property. So, we are not allowed to move stakes. will be going on now. And one of the considerations, remember we discussed with Congressman McCormick, was that of the possibility we'd enter into a contract that we'd take some of the contracts on this to do it with some of our own help.
Yeah, the number one tailings, which is right across from us here, that it's a smaller, it's only 20 acres. Technically, it wouldn't be as difficult to deal with to rehabilitate it. We also have a real interest in that because that's where we get most of our air pollution is from this first tailings pile. And the possibility might be there where we could actually enter into contract with the Forest Service to do that work ourselves. And then we would, of course, have to hire the personnel and purchase the equipment and so forth and be involved in that, which could be a rather exciting community project and one which the Bureau of Mines probably could get some money to enter in with us because we're non-profit and we're doing it not for profit, but for, you know, the purpose of really solving a problem. And McCormick mentioned that he thought that it would be very feasible to, you know, work under this. Because the government is always anxious to have somebody else do something for them more cheaply than they can get it done themselves. I'm sure we could do it for half or less of what they'd have to contract it for.
And we are pleased, of course, that he's offering us, you know, this kind of advice and encouragement. Are there any questions for Werner on this? He spent many hours on many days on this.
I have a suggestion. Maybe this is a dual question for you and for Werner. Is not ashes a base like lime? And if we took the ashes of all the wood that's burned and put it up there, just in a regular rhythmic matter, wouldn't that help?
That would help. It's just a matter that we're talking about such small quantities compared to what's necessary. But
still, if we put the steam generator in,
well,
that would up it tremendously.
Yeah, that would be a different
That's a good point.
The thing about it, though, the type of wood we have here has a very low ash content.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. I remember you discussed that. But we'll make a note of that, especially if we go to a steam generator. All right, we just have 10 minutes, and I want to summarize the rest of it for you, and I can almost do it, I think, in the time left. The ninth point had to do with forest utilization, and of course, this is of great concern for us. We've talked about cleaning up the forest around. We are considering, we are giving serious thought to reforestation, to look at sort of high moisture areas where cedars may be planted, looking ahead 20 years or so. And what we need here again is a database, and proposing a very comprehensive timber cruise of this area, so we know what kind of and how much of what kind of forest we have here and will have in the future, what kind of down trees and its utilization. And the tenth point has to do with land use, and we need some there again a project to look at what is the best utilization. Is that area down below 10 Mile Creek, which is one of my favorite places to go walking, and which Al will go down there tomorrow, is this a feasible area for a garden area, and say compared with what's available up there, and in the tailings as we go to them, and we didn't mention it, that will they be feasible for growth, and for what kind of plants, and if you do grow plants for eating, will there be toxicity in these? So these are the kinds of things on land utilization that concern us. Are there any other points that the committee wishes to bring up before we go through the project? We're very interested, of course, in education, as Marion pointed out, and the rest of us are, we're basically two educators, and we want to involve this in a educational enterprise. And as you know, some colleges have been here with classes for the interim. And Chet Sauter, who was on leave this last year from Concordia, is a physicist and was doing work at Washington State University and also here, would like to have projects for his students to come out. And some of you have already talked to me about
having some kind of a project. One of our friends of our village here who's going into ministry, his advanced work is in physics and would like to maintain association with this. So I'll just list now some of the projects that we have talked about. We've mentioned, and most of them I've already mentioned, the steam generator plant, the initial, to look at that, the initial proposal, and go to an initial proposal, looking at the economics of it relative to others and its application to other small towns, the siting of it, and associated information. B is the water in a mine as a source of power, and looking at the measurements of the water output, the water quality, the feasibility of precipitating out copper and other materials that may be in it. C is a wind study that we talked about in the various locations here to develop a database. The solar, the small pilot plant, and then going to a perhaps to furnishing the considerable power to the two buildings there, Lodge 2 and to the dining hall. I forgot to mention one thing in here. We are doing calculations. We were doing calculations on the amount of hot water, which is 180, 190 degrees, going through our dishwasher, which runs for an hour and a half, three times a day during the winter, during the summer. Of course, our power from there comes from hydrocarbon fuel. Well, the water coming in is very cold. And if you could then use a heat exchanger from the exhaust water, which is still very hot, to take to go around the incoming cold water, you'd save quite a bit of heat. And so that's another thing we were looking at. Another thing is transportation from wood to methane that I mentioned, the cellulose to methane conversion, the heating the garage from air to the mine. We have to get basic data. This is another possible project. The reclaimed tailings, what to grow, how to stabilize it, what forage might be workable, what toxic material might be in a plant that might be utilized that would be edible, and the kinds of plants, and looking at frost history and that type of thing. We look into the hydroponics thing as its application in this situation and do a cost analysis. The fish culture that I mentioned, and the solar stoves. Al has a solar stove, and he cooks hamburgers and bacon and stuff on it. And if we find the right kind of cardboard and all, he can build one here. But at least next year, he's going to bring up a couple for us and have a cookout solar day here.
Then the hamburgers become solar burgers.
Yeah, solar burgers. And I mentioned the garbage truck methane burner is another possibility. The water wheel, figuring out how much power you can get out of there. I mentioned the timber crews. So we have Roger Evenson here is a possibility. And then looking at the best growing area. So this has been a very exciting time for me, and we've had a very good time. It's been a real pleasure for me to work with these people. And we look forward to another meeting. We look forward to names of people that you might suggest that would be a good input to us, or are a source of donations, also of food and expertise. Are there any other points that the committee wishes to make?
Have you considered control cutting of timber from the standpoint of, 18,000 board feet is an awful lot. The amount of lumber that this place is going to use is not tremendous. We talked about sustained yield.
Yes, it's a good point to look at the forest from the timber crews. We then go to how do we maintain our needs.
One thing that's in connection with our low cost for the timber. The only thing we're using in our mill now is dead timber. We haven't cut a green tree yet, and this is why we're getting it for such little cost. And more trees are dying around us than what we can utilize right now. Yeah. Lynn Falls and Ernie Falls.
And I don't know what... If you see an Ernie, he's running around injecting trees.
Yeah, it's funny, if you just make a ring around it with a chainsaw, they die.
Take that off the record.